Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1. 499-9898 is the number to call. Don't forget about the Thanksgiving Day Buffet here at the Bonton Buffet starting at 11 a.m. $29.95 with all the traditional favorites and Thanksgiving dinner to go. An order that feeds 8 people for only $95. It includes your slow roasted turkeys and bourbon glazed hams, 3 sides, a dressing, 2 sauces, an order of rolls and cornbread, and you can have pecan pie. You can have pumpkin pie. We got choices for your dessert here.
I'll meet you at the buffet lunch.
And you can pick it up as late as noon on Thanksgiving Day.
Pecan pie.
499-9898 is the number. BC is in Baton Rouge. BC, welcome into the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Bueno, what's up, man?
Good to hear from y'all. So I was kind of inspired by Jimmy's question this afternoon on the Daily Show. So here's my question. What happens if LSU wins the toss? Do you take the ball and try and score first and send a message? Or do you do the Belichick thing and try and score on the back end of the first half and first possession of the second half? And also, T-Bob, if you consider Joe Burrow to be Captain America, picking up the Thor's hammer,
yeah,
who is then Iron Man? Stealing the stones off of Thanos and declaring that he is Iron Man instead of I am inevitable.
Can I take the toss question first?
Yeah, it's good. I need to think about this.
All right. Ed made a comment on Monday that I'm ready to go in with our guys. Do I believe that we can win this game? Yeah, I wouldn't take anybody other than my guys. And I'm not asking them. I don't have the quote here with me, but I'm gonna paraphrase here, which was something along the lines of, we don't have to ask them to do anything that they wouldn't ordinarily be able to do. We don't have to play. He didn't say play over our heads, but that's the way I heard it. And in 2014, I really think that the feeling was, hey, you guys got to play over your heads, and it turned out not to be really the case. So I tell you all of that to tell you that if LSU won the toss against anybody else, what would they do? They defer.
I always miss the toss. I'm driving back from the pregame show. What have they done this year?
They defer. Okay. Almost every time. And so with that in mind, I would defer. I would say this is what we do. We believe we'd rather have the ball in the second half after we can make adjustments. We trust our defense to go out there to get a 3-and-out, to get us good field position to start the game. I understand why he's asking the question. Do you want to put your better unit out there first to try to seize momentum?
You kind of try to make a statement, man.
Yeah, my thought is that everybody's a little bit amped up. You know, you're going out there to kick off, the adrenaline's as high as it's ever going to be, and I'd rather be on defense with that in mind. I'm not going to say it's a terrible call if they do, but I would defer.
Yeah, I would defer. I mean, because you want to do what you've been doing all week. Is it a big game? Yeah, it's a big game, but they're all big games. And as you go through November, when you get into November,
every game
it's going to be big.
Next one
it
bigger.
Makes bigger. So, you know, don't change your routine.
Yeah.
You practice the way you practice. You practice the same way you practice. You do everything the same way you've always done it, and you defer.
T-Bob, how many drives do you think it took them really to get comfortable with what Auburn was showing them the other day? The three-man, the 3-1-7 essentially is what it was.
I mean, I kind of feel like it took until half. Now they still had success in the first half in spurts, but when they really committed just being like, let's just run the ball in the second half, like that's when they started, I think, that's when Auburn suddenly had to throw a fourth D lineman back into the game.
Then we can predict two things here. Number one, that Saban will show them something that they haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Is that a reasonable prediction?
Or
at least a different wrinkle on something
yes,
that
yes,
they haven't
yes,
seen.
Exactly. Yes. I think he will find some way to stress you, and maybe they haven't been stressed before.
Do we trust his staff to make good in-game adjustments?
Yes.
I do for the LSU staff.
Offensively?
Yes, for the first time in years.
Okay. Then I'd rather have an extra possession, potentially an extra possession in the second half.
That's a great point, Handy. I was just going to say that I just like getting the ball the second half just from, like, a rhythm standpoint. I think it makes your end-of-the-half scenarios always way more advantageous. But that's really an excellent point, Handy.
Never use 5 words when you can use 50 T-bombs. Radio technique.
Well, no, but I mean, but I haven't even – I've never even thought about that, and you're absolutely spot on.
And here's another thing, Charlie. I think when you're playing a game like this as a player – and we always did, T-Bob. You guys probably did, too. When you know it's a big game, one of the things you're looking for. You're looking at the coach to see if something changes, see if his demeanor changes.
Yeah.
See if he plays more emphasis on this. If he starts all of a sudden getting out of the comfort zone, not doing what we normally do, all of a sudden it sends a message. Now, well, you know, he's not real comfortable with this now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, and I think that's why I would do what I normally do.
I like this quote from Christian Fulton. This comes from Cody Warsham on Twitter, at Cody Warsham. He's an excellent follow for all LSU fans. Quote, we're not switching anything up. We're going to be man across the board. It shows what you're really made of. They've got NFL guys. We've got NFL guys, too. It's a fun one. You look forward to these games. So there you go.
I love the quote, except when Saban knows what you're going to do, he figures out a way to beat it, okay? You just brought up that darkest day in history back in January 2012, and why did Alabama beat LSU within an inch of their life? Because Saban knew exactly what they were going to do.
But no, here's okay. the key problem. But here's the key problem is that was an infinitely less threatening what they were going to do. Like not only did he know what they were going to do, but when he figured it out, he probably had to be like, really?
I like the confidence. Throwing something a little bit
and
different.
And then there were no adjustments.
Yeah.
Literally.
Charlie, here's the thing, and I'm going to use a boxing analogy. You know, you get in the ring and you're fighting.
I love boxing.
You know, I'm going to hit the guy in the face. I'm going to hit him right in the nose.
Yeah.
Now, that's one thing. The big thing is, what's he going to do when I hit him?
Yeah.
What's he going to do when I hit him?
He's going to hit you back.
Well, you know, if he does, if he hits me back more times than I've hit him that one time, it's a different game. And that's the key. When Saban's going to do something to you that's different, and he's going to do something to take away what he knows you want to do.
Don't show that guy the same look every time, man. They will find a way to exploit you.
I will say this, though. I don't think, you know, I don't think it's too much hidden information that they're going to play a majority man, right? I mean, like, they struggled in zone defense.
And that's fine. I'm not saying don't do what you do.
Yeah. They're going to have to play some.
I think they'll play some. I think they'll show them something different. I think they'll show them one thing and get into something else. I think they may get into some coverages in a different way than they have in the past. That's just a normal thing.
Here's the thing, though. Okay, this is what I've been trying to parse through all week. These teams seem so similar in so many ways. Who actually has the better defense out of the two teams?
I think LSU's got the better defense.
I think LSU has the better secondary.
Yeah.
I think Alabama probably has a slight advantage up front.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that this year, just because they're so young.
I don't.
Raekwon Davis makes up for a ton.
Right.
And Terrell Lewis is more successful and, let's just say better than any pass rusher that you've had this season. I mean, he's been on a bit of a snap count himself, and he's gone home six times. But you got a freshman nose guard. You got a freshman D tackle. Every single backup in that front six. Remember, you got two freshman linebackers, too. One of them, Christian Harris, there, right?
I was going to get to that. I think that's what the biggest disadvantage is.
Oh, no doubt. Linebacker's their weakest position.
I think it's it. Because of youth.
Yes. But if you look at the front six, D-line and linebackers, every single backup, except for one man who's on the three deep, is a redshirt sophomore or younger. So they're young. LSU's bringing a lot of upperclassmen in their defensive line rotation to bear. So I like LSU there. Secondaries are a wash, really, to me. They're both great. I'm struggling with Alabama safety's names off the top of my head, Handy. Maybe you can fill me in or help me out. But they got high picks in the safeties. Surtain and the other corner for Alabama are both top five in PFF's national quarterback grades. Obviously, Stingley and Fulton's resume speaks for itself. Jacoby Stevens has been back-to-back scout or SEC Defensive Player of the Week. Grant Delpit is Grant Delpit. So I view that as a wash. Maybe where I land on LSU being better is it's kind of what you were hitting on, Greg. I think LSU's linebacker. I think Jacob Phillips and Patrick Queen are stronger right now than Bama's linebacking core is. Yeah. That said, I guess I mainly bring this up just because, like, the defenses are kind of the same. LSU gives up 4.6 yards per play. Alabama gives up 4.5. LSU allows 315 yards per game. Alabama allows 307.
Here's why I think the LSU defense is better. I think Alabama's rush defense stats are a little bit skewed because they played a New Mexico State. I think they played a Duke. Let me give you their SEC numbers against, and this is on the ground. Keep in mind that in the last four games against Alabama, LSU has rushed for over 100 yards one time, It was the Matt Canada game, and about half of their rushing yards came on a wildcat that went to Darrell Williams that he broke nearly for a touchdown. Okay, the rest of the other three games combined, they've rushed for under 100 yards total. Now, here's what Alabama has given up in SEC games this year. South Carolina ran the ball on Alabama for 135 yards. And again, I'm giving you this stat because the number that LSU has not gotten to is well below 100. Ole Miss ran the ball for 279 yards against Alabama. Texas A&M rushed the ball for 125 yards against Alabama. Tennessee rushed the ball for 114 yards against Alabama. And Arkansas, who at this point could not win CUSA, rushed for over 100 yards against Alabama. As well,
I've never heard that.
Now, understand that Arkansas got some garbage yards at the end because Alabama was ahead by six touchdowns. But still, the point is you can run the football on them, and most of the time you can't.
Okay,
they
so
make
that,
you one-dimensional. They put these gargantuan forklift-sized guys on the line of scrimmage, and you just simply can't move them. And you're forced to get out of any kind of offensive balance that you might have. That's not the case this time.
Yeah, there's an analytic called stuff rate where it measures, like, how many times do you stop a team from getting the kind of expected yardage. First, so the data is telling you, right? Alabama's normally elite in that set. They're always top five, lead the country, whatever. They're 90th in stuff rate this year. So here's the question. From a game planning standpoint, is LSU going to favor running the ball? Because when you look at Alabama's pass defense, that is a whole other story.
Here's the beauty part, T-Bob. We're not to decide on Wednesday. You know where they're going to decide? At the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
The numbers are going to dictate what they do. They're not going to go up there and look at 10 people in the box and go, we're strong, physical, we're going to get in there, and we're just going to fight and claw like that.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like that. They're going to get up there, and if they see eight people in the box, they're going to throw the football. And if they see five people and you got a 1-to-1 ratio or a 6-on-6 in the box, then they're going to run the football. They're not trying to chop the tree down with a sledgehammer. They're going to use a chainsaw this time. I don't know if they're going to win, but at least I feel like they're going to go in there with a plan that's got an opportunity to move the football on these people.
What they're going to do, they're going to do something, Charlie, I know that you don't like to hear. They're going to do what they've always done.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, they got to come to the line of scrimmage.
What they've always done is dependent on what they
see.
Right.
And that's what they're going
to
do.
I'm fine with that. 499-9898 is the number to call.
For this year. Like, that's the literal reason why I feel better about this year than any year that I have since 2012.
Back after this, Tiger Zone, Eagle 98.1. Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1. 499-9898 is the number to call. We're here at the Stadium Sports Bar and Grill at LeBaire's. Sunday Baker's Dozen Bud Light Buckets for $24 all day. NFL Sunday Ticket, Saints back in action against the Falcons on Sunday at noon. Monday Night Football, buy one, get one half off beer towers. Wednesdays for the Tiger Zone, buy one, get one half off frozen margaritas and draft beer. And Thursdays, a pint of draft beer and six wings for only $10. Military and senior citizens, anybody over the age of 50, actually, will get 25% off their lunch purchases here on Mondays and Tuesdays, all part of the Stadium Sports Bar and Grill here at LeBaire's.
All right. Kurt Taylor asks, y'all think will there be more tied in play in the game plan in red zone? Moss has developed into a major player on the offensive side.
I don't know about tight end play, but red zone is of some concern to me because of the Mississippi State game and because in the Auburn game you had three drives into the 1 yard line that produced 3 points. I'm not opposed to seeing Thaddeus Moss out there because I think he's having a terrific year and I think he's a really good player. But if you're asking me for a key in the red zone, I'd be looking for number six.
Yeah.
Because Marshall, I think, has been as effective in the red zone as anything that they've had this year. And I thought that against Mississippi State, you know, maybe one of those possessions goes a little bit different if he's in there. He made a key play against Auburn right when LSU needed it. I'm not opposed to Moss. If he's open, by all means, throwing the football, but Marshall's my guy.
I think so. I think you spread him out. If you want to put Moss in a slot or put him out, flex him out a little bit to give him a little room, that's fine. But when you get down there in the red zone, you've got to go to your strength if you're going to throw the ball. And the strength is those wide receivers.
Yeah. Not to say that Jefferson and Chase are bad options
no,
either.
No, you got to go to wide receivers.
But Marshall's got a he's got a real nose for it down there.
I'm with you, Greg. I think what you're saying is put in Burrow's hands when you're down there. Yeah. Like, let him be the guy that decides whether you score or not, and I'm in complete agreement there. But it does bear mentioning that Thad Moss's emergence has been one of the great surprises, pleasant surprises of this year, but it's also been one of the critical pieces in this offense having success. When LSU was struggling against Auburn a bit, who was the safety valve that allowed Burrow to escape multiple sacks and get into like 7-yard gains, 8-yard gains? It was Thad Moss making tough catches over the middle. When they want to run the ball, and then they run the ball for 120 yards in the second half, who's one of the key members of that rushing attack? Thad Moss's run blocking is violent. His chips on pass rushers are violent. There are multiple clips of him bodying guys coming at their hips. So Thad Moss has been one of the nicest pieces of this offense. And for as much as we mentioned the big three at receiver, it's when you combine them with Thad Moss and you combine them with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and then the conductor, Joe Burrow, that's when it becomes such the wonderful offensive symphony that we've seen all year.
I mean, Moss is coming. I think he's got 21 catches on the season, and certainly you want to use your tight end in there. But I think you get down, you flex him out, maybe put him in the passing game. The other one that I think becomes important when you get inside the red zone is passes to the running back.
Yeah.
I think you got all those receivers. Everybody's paying attention. And you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has proved if you can get him the ball in the open field, he can make some people miss.
He'll make you miss. That triple deke that he hit on that last game was unbelievable.
Can I say one more thing about Moss?
Also, the only reason you have room to do that triple deke is because you're in the spread and you give your playmaker space.
That's right.
Here's what I like about Thaddeus Moss. One of the things I like about Thaddeus Moss, we're in an era of college football where nobody has any patience, okay? There's no wait your turn. There's no progress. There's no grow. I want it all, and I want it now. And for Moss, since he got here, he spends an entire year sitting out and then an entire year injured. And it's not like they started out throwing the ball to him, you know, 8-10 times a game. In the first game, he caught 2 passes. In the second game, he caught 1 pass. In the third game, he didn't play. In the fourth game, he didn't catch any passes. But in the last 4 weeks, he's caught 18 balls and become a really important part of this offense. And he's done nothing but work hard and be right where he's supposed to be and play his behind off. And it came after a lot of setbacks for him, a lot of things he had to work through, none of which were his fault.
You know, I mean, it's crazy.
General obstacles in becoming a good college football player, like, hey, the NC State thing didn't work out, so I'm going to transfer. Well, you got to sit out a year. Okay. Then you get hurt, you miss a whole year. Then they're changing this whole offense, and it's not exactly geared to you from day one. That's all right. I'm all in. And now he's really starting to, you know, bear the fruits of all of this. I love stories like that.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think probably the most exciting thing, what kept him going, Charlie, in the offense is all of a sudden he looked at the offense and he realized, look, you know, all of a sudden I'm not an offensive tackle with a tight end number.
Very exciting for the tight ends, yeah.
I mean, you know, when he got here, he was destined to be a tight end with a tackle with a tight end number.
That is what I love about Thad Moss is he could have been that guy, and I would have never guessed it because, like you said, Hanny, the whispers were always last year that they thought he was soft. Like a lot of guys in the program thought he was soft. And if you've witnessed his play this year, I mean, nothing could be further from the truth. That's why I love him. On top of his pass-catching ability, he is a true tight end. He can block his ass off.
And one more thing, if I can do like 3 or 4 one more things about Thad Moss and things I like about him. I have no experience with this, obviously, but I think – when you're the son of a superstar, I think it's harder.
Yes,
You walk onto every field with the name of a Hall of Famer on the back of your jersey, and for every Ken, and this goes across multiple sports, for every Ken Griffey Jr. that, you know, became a Hall of Famer, there's a Michael Jordan Jr. that
didn't make
this it. Is impossible for me to live up to. I think, you know, having Randy Moss, the Hall of Famer, as your dad, that follows you everywhere. That puts a target on your back for opponents and things like that. I think he's handled that very well.
And I think, to his credit, the one thing that he's done is that he has personally handled his own thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not necessarily what other people expect of him, but his own expectations, I think. And I think that's really helped him more than anything, is that he has not put that on his back, that I'm going to be my dad.
I still cannot believe And I didn't realize how crazy it was when I was younger that Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. hit back-to-back home runs in the big leagues.
Yeah, that's a crazy
that
story.
That makes no sense. That is absurd. Like, that should not be possible.
Ken Griffey was an excellent baseball player. Right. Okay, an excellent. Big red machine.
Really,
yeah,
really
excellent. Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the top 20 players of all time.
Yeah.
20, 25 players of all time. Okay, that's hard. I mean,
the hell of a father-son combo.
My goodness. Okay.
I think for me, the biggest difference is that the dad was a great baseball player. The son was a great athlete.
Yeah,
that shows up.
For this, you know, you go out there and you're, oh, Moss, oh, well, you must be just like your dad. And as a player, he's nothing like his dad.
I mean,
but it doesn't mean he hasn't been fantastic in what they've asked him to do.
The word Moss literally has its own football meaning. It means you jumped over the guy and dominated him for a catch.
Yeah.
Like, that's how much that last name means to football.
Come back and take some more of your phone calls here. The Tiger Zone from LeBears, Eagle 98.1. Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1 from the Stadium Bar and Grill here at LeBears. Remind you, coming up here, coming up the event center, we've got some terrific shows coming up here before the end of the year. The Brian McKnight 4 here on November the 15th, Parrish County Line on November 29th, and Aaron Neville back on December the 14th. And, of course, New Year's Eve Bash is always a huge, huge promotional night here at LeBears. So make any plans to make a trip out here. Back to the phone lines, 499-9898 is the number. Greg is in Mississippi. Greg, welcome into the show.
Hey, good evening, fellas. Just two quick questions. Whose special teams do you feel better about going into Saturday's game? Actually, whose kicker? And the second question, do you think Georgia's got their act together or just Florida just had a bad day and got some bad calls? Could you see Auburn derailing Georgia's bid to win out and get and represent the SEC? You guys have a great show. Appreciate you guys. Yeah, go.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
I don't know that there's a ton of difference between Auburn, Florida, and Georgia. I think those are all really good teams that have their flaws, have their strong points, and on the right day, you put those three teams in a round robin, you might have very, very similar winning percentages. I don't look at those three teams and go, that team's way better than that team. That's my read.
If I had to rate those teams, I think I'd rate Georgia 1, Auburn 2, Florida 3.
The thing, people kept asking me, like, who'd you rather play again, Florida, Georgia, the last Saturday, and I kept saying Florida.
Right.
Because what does concern me about Georgia, and, yeah, man, look, the South Carolina loss is really bad, and I think their offense eventually will have to evolve. They're kind of going through, like, a little bit of an LSU phase right now.
Going through denial.
But they got a damn good defense, dude. They don't got any receivers, but they got a damn good defense. And that's what would concern me about playing Georgia.
Well, plus they have a good offensive line. If you can, anytime you can run the ball, you have that kind of an offensive line, it can create problems for you.
As far as special teams are concerned, I'll still take Cade York. I'm less confident now than I would have been a few weeks ago, but Alabama's kicking's bad. They're 11th in the SEC. They made 9 of 14 kicks in the year. That's 65%. So it's a bit better than a coin flip chance. Anytime they line up, they're going to make it.
I had a lot of confidence in LSU special teams right up into the Auburn game, and then they were terrible. They're really bad.
But it was a flip.
Okay, so maybe it's a one-off, okay? I think you got two punt returners that have a huge, huge talent that could break one at any time, but give Waddle the edge there, but it's not huge. The biggest discrepancy is in the punters. LSU, and Von Rosenberg didn't have a very good game against Auburn, but he's been solid the rest of the year. He's averaging right at about 41 yards a kick. Alabama's last in the league at 35. This would have been a bigger deal back in 2011. You know, I don't know if LSU had anybody more important that night, T-Bob, than Brad Wing.
I have always said I have never seen a punter impact a game like Brad Wing did.
Brad Wing
literally won us the game.
That was the best year I've ever seen a punter have in college. And I watched Chad Kessler average 50 yards a kick. And Wing was better than him because Kessler never had to punt out of bounds inside the 20. But that's the one place where there's a pretty clear statistical disadvantage. As far as the kickers go, there's going to be so much pressure in this game that I seriously hope it doesn't come down to a kick. The punters would be a bigger deal if this were going to be a lower scoring game. Yeah. The 2011 game was a field position game. Yeah. I don't suspect this one will be. If you're looking for one big statistical number, the punting is favors LSU.
It favors LSU, and the thing that's surprising is you look at both punt returners, both Waddle and Stingley, they're at the bottom of the league in punt returns, both of them.
Yeah. How about this? LSU.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on. Alabama. Am I giving credit to the wrong guy? Alabama's second in the league in punt return average. Am I giving credit to?
I'm
saying Waddle because
that's
I've
not
still
Waddle.
Got.
I think there's a team they are, but yeah,
they are as a team. I got the South Carolina game in my head. punt return. No, it's Waddle. He's number one in the league.
Yeah, it's Waddle. He's averaging 21 yards a return. Definite advantage for Alabama there, but. LSU's, I mean, whatever. I think LSU's field goal.
Yeah, LSU's
averaging
nine, right at 10 yards of return.
Kickoffs.
Stingley's a little bit gun shy right now. I think he fumbled the last one because he thought that he should have made a play on at least one, if not two, of the punts before that. And so you get a little bit of a crisis confidence there.
So they have the punt return, sure. But it looks like, I mean, every other group is in LSU's favor. I'm even looking at touchback percentage now on kickoffs. Alabama's touchback percentage is actually one of the worst in the league. They're 46%.
Ah, kickoff returns.
Yes. Do you know who's number one in the SEC in kickoff returns?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
LSU? Yeah. I don't know if Clyde is. I mean, it has to be Clyde, right? It's 25 yards a return, though. Now, I think they average less than one return a game. But
yeah, there's not that many that are being.
They average 1.1. There's only. There's only two teams in the SEC that average more than two kick returns per game to show you how much that has advanced.
Because everybody can kick the ball out of the end zone now.
Exactly, yeah, pretty much. Right. Well, except for Alabama. They're under 50%. So there you go.
are you on
– Maybe that's by design.
Are you on the Jimmy Ott school of Saban psychs out kickers?
I have no I find no other way to explain what happens to kickers at Alabama.
It's tough. You know, that what surprises me is Saban's known as a guy that pays attention to detail. I mean, every little detail from what time they're going to walk on the field in pregame, when they're going to leave off. And all of a sudden, the one thing that causes him problems is kickers.
It's not that they're not recruiting good kickers. It's that they get there and –
pressure.
Would you want to face him after you missed a kick?
I've heard some crazy stories.
That's where you go to the other end of the bench. Come to the sideline, just go to the other end of the bench.
Just hand him your gear and just forget
these
it,
things
man.
Probably grow in the telling. But I did hear a tale back in his LSU days about a kicker who missed a critical kick and on that Monday team meeting was asked to get in front of the team and drop his pants to prove that he was a man.
Oh goodness.
Which I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. That's a legend. This is what I've heard. But
let's call that an urban legend for now and move
Fine.
On before
sure.
we get into it.
Yeah. Look, I'm not saying it's not.
Joshua and Baton Rouge, shut up now. Joshua and Baton Rouge is next. Welcome into the show.
Bad news.
What?
Train set's ruined.
Now I was worried about that.
Again. Good news is, love the show. Thank you guys so much for the breakdown on the stuff, Ray. Bowser, thank you for the baseball analogies. Charlie, thank you for the SEC stats. I'm excited about this rushing game. T-Bob, thanks for them rushing. I mean, the stuff rate. Yeah. Charlie, you stole my thunder on the Thaddeus Moss. Can you please give me a prediction on – I was going to ask you, you know, what's your prediction on his catches and yards? And then my prediction, Bama TD late, 34-24 LSU, and that's two field goals, not a missed extra point. Thanks, guys. Wonderful show.
Thanks. It's hard to predict the stats in this game, but my guess is that Moss will have probably somewhere around, you know, say four or five catches and, you know, maybe something like 65, 70 yards, you know, maybe 10, 12 yards a catch, something like that. Just a guess.
Sure.
That's a pure guess.
It's predicting individual stat lines a bit weird. I'll go... Four catches, 38 yards.
Four catches for 38 yards.
I think he gets three catches.
Outlet
max. Three catches max. Yeah. Okay. I think so.
Poor Thaddeus. Can't buy a catch.
Thaddeus Moss Fan Club.
By the way.
Charter member right here.
I think that Iron Man is Joe Burrow. And Captain
finally
America,
coming back around on that?
Yeah, I forgot. Okay. I had it in my notes here.
All right.
And Captain America picking up Thor's hammer is what you need out of Grant Delpit. You think that he can pick up Thor's hammer? Now he just needs to go and prove.
I would like to hear that Grant Delpit is back at practice. Is what I'd like to hear.
Here was a question from the huddle: is Nick Saban happy about the president going to the game?
Does he even know?
Oh, he
yeah, he's got to. He's got to know.
We just talked about how detail oriented he is, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, my man knows. He doesn't care. He does not care from a political perspective.
I think he cares.
All he cares about is it going to impact anything
in
the routine?
As long as it doesn't upset the routine, he could care.
Let me tell you something. I've been to a game where the president is in attendance, a baseball game, as a member of the media at the College World Series, and it upsets everybody's routine.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've got metal detectors and stuff like that at gates now anyway, but you have routes to the stadium. You have certain areas that are cordoned off. When the president travels, you've got to have, first of all, the working media's got to travel with him. You've got to set up situation rooms in case there's a national emergency. You've got to set up places where he's allowed to address the nation if you have a national emergency. And it disrupts everybody. I remember when we were at Rosenblatt and George W. Bush was there. They cordoned off so much of the press box just in case. The Secret Service presence was palpable. I tried to stand in the hall so I could shake hands with the president because I'd never shaken hands with the president before. And they strongly suggested to me to get back in my booth and stay there until the president was in, like, Iowa. Okay? They had no sense of humor at all about this stuff. I tell you all of this to tell you that
try to peek out.
The president's presence at a game creates a security level that is bigger than anything that you would see for any event that you go to.
Yeah, it makes
sense. I don't know how that's going to affect the team's route in, where they are. Probably nothing, but it does create issues for game management. And I've seen LSU Alabama at Tiger Stadium where you had more credentialed media at Tiger Stadium than for any other game. They set records. And I can't imagine where they would have put the presidential detail, the Secret Service detail, the press corps, the situation room, and all the stuff they have to. Going to be an absolute circus as far as the logistics of it. Now, whether this is going to interrupt Saban, he'll do everything in his power not to have it affect them. But like I said, the Secret Service, they don't care.
Yeah.
They are going to do their deal, and you are going to acquiesce to them or else. They may be the only – I don't know how many guys travel with the president. They'll be the only people in the world today that don't give a flip who Nick Saban is. Promise.
You know, having dealt with those guys when they come in, you're right, Charlie. The Secret Service takes over, and whatever plans you had, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And here's the big thing about the president being at an event is that – what makes Secret Service people nervous is people, other people moving around.
Yeah.
So when he moves, nobody else can move.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the direct vicinity.
You can't move around him.
Yeah.
And then once he's settled someplace, nobody can come near it.
Hey, did he just decide? I saw the story was like Monday, right? That he decided to go to the game.
Yeah.
They like to do advance. I've read a good bit about presidential details. So I'm just interested in that stuff. They like to go way in advance. I mean, they like to do everything from take the air conditioners apart where he's going to be sitting.
That's, you know, so they can, wild. I mean, it makes complete sense, right?
And so when he gives them, and when the president says, I want to go, you have to make it happen if you're the Secret Service. So if he says on Monday, I want to go to this event with 100,000 people in the stadium and another, 30,000 people outside, and they got to make it happen.
Yeah. Are we sure that
this
Nick
is a hard job?
My thing is, like I said, having dealt with these guys, I would not be shocked if all of a sudden he's not going.
It would not shock me. It would take a big workload off the plate of a lot of guys with glasses and earpieces.
And here's one of the things that's going to cause the problem for him is because you can't fly Air Force One into Tuscaloosa, okay?
You know that?
Yeah. You can't put it there. You can't get in there. It can't happen.
Why, the airport's too small?
It's not big enough. It's not big enough.
Wow.
Can't fly it into there, Charlie.
Okay.
And so I didn't
know that.
Here's why that's significant is because when something happens, the Secret Service believes the most safest place for the President of the United States is on that airplane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what creates a problem for him because anything happens, he's going in that car and he's getting to that airplane.
Well, and think about this.
And it'd be a long drive.
Can we be sure that Nick Saban isn't a Russian sleeper agent? I mean, I don't know. You utter the right combination of words, and who knows what Saban will do.
Here's what I'd like to see.
Could fly off the handle.
Here's what I'd like to see. If the president goes to the game, I'd like to see him all of a sudden say, you know what, I want to go down and shake hands with Nick Saban before the game. I mean, that'd be good. Would Nick break the routine and say hello?
You have to. I mean, yeah, like you have to at that point.
You know, when he was
that would play right into sleeper agent Saban's hands.
No,
up.
I'm not talking about when he walks as his walk through his suit. I'm talking about when the team is out on the field and they're warming up and he's standing in the middle doing all that. I think go walk out there and shake Nick's hands. I'd like to see that.
You remember the story when he was with the Dolphins?
He's so mad.
He had been asked to have dinner with it was the president and Don Shula, Dan Marino, and the president wanted George W. Bush wanted to have dinner with Nick Saban, the Dolphins coach. I think it was Don Shula, Dan Marino, and him. And Saban said, "I got to go to football practice." The president calls. Okay, not I disagree with your politics. I don't want to meet with you. I got to go to football practice. What? That happened. That was reported.
I, the president's listening to our broadcast. Listen, you've got to go down, Mr. President, and shake hands with him in pregame. You got to go down and do that.
Hey,
you know?
Be careful, though. Yeah, like I said, we don't know. Where does Saban's real loyalty lie? We don't know. Nobody knows. We heard he's from West Virginia. How can we be sure? Have you seen the birth certificate, Hanny? I've never seen it.
I think it's time to get out of this.
I think I'm losing it. I've talked so much LSU Alabama this week.
What a relief.
I have somehow arrived on Nick Saban being a Russian sleeper agent attempting to assassinate the president. I got to go.
That's the only angle I have.
I don't know what's going on in my brain anymore.
That's the only angle I've not heard this
week. That's true. I mean, you come to Tiger Zone, you're going to get angles. Nowhere else.
This is the Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1. Everything from special teams to presidential detail, the Tiger Zone, we've covered it all tonight, even a little bit of Iron Man. Remind you, the big Thanksgiving Day buffet here at the Bonton Buffet for $29.95, but also Thanksgiving dinners to go for up to 8 people for $95. A great, great deal and a huge variety of things to choose from. That's all here for Thanksgiving at L'Auberge. We usually do a run through the SEC. At the end of the show, it's lost in the magnitude of the LSU Alabama game. Really bad card. Western Kentucky is a 1.5-point underdog to Arkansas. I have no idea.
I'm shocked they're an underdog.
I have no idea how much longer Chad Morris is going to have a job. Vandy at Florida is a horrible game. New Mexico State is winless at Ole Miss is a horrible game. Missouri, I would have been interesting to me 2 weeks ago before Missouri forgot how to play football the last 2 weeks. App State at South Carolina is probably the best game, the most interesting game. App State is among a group of teams vying to be that group of five representative in the New Year's Six Bowls. And Tennessee and Kentucky, I guess, is marginally interesting. But the world will be focused on Tuscaloosa. Our pregame coverage starts at 9:30 with Eagle 98.1 Game Day. That's T-Bob and Matt Moscona. Following the game, Richard Dixon and myself with the Scoreboard Show on ESPN, followed by Eagle 98.1 Game Day. Going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us tonight for Greg Bowser, for T-Bob Bebear, for Chuck back in the studio. I'm Charles Haniger saying thank you and good evening. This has been the Tiger Zone from L'Auberge on Eagle 98.1.
Go Tigers.